You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Welcome, citizens, to this day in history with Benjamin J. Goldson.
Yes, this day in history, once again, doing the 1985 Anglo-Irish Agreement. This by itself didn't actually achieve that much directly, but it sort of set the stage for the Good Friday Agreement about a decade later, which was sort of gave devolved government to Northern Ireland, so it was seen as a sort of important step in resolving the Troubles, which is the sort of name for the quasi sort of civil war that happened around Northern Ireland and the Republic. Again, it's sort of really hard to say when it started because it's such a tit-for-tat thing, but it's generally recognised that it started in the late 60s with riots in the town of Londonderry.
Londonderry. This was the peaceful prelude to days of rioting and violence, the beginning of a new and bloody chapter in the grim history of the city. As the Apprentice Boys Parade, a traditional Protestant march, wound its way through the streets, there was no hint of the violence that was to rip Londonderry apart. It was only when the march was almost over that tempers began to get frayed. Stones were thrown from the Catholic Bogside area. Within minutes, barricades were going up, and militant MP Bernadette Devlin was addressing the crowd. The police prepared to defend themselves from the stones that were already beginning to hail down on them. Protestants gathered to reply to the Catholic stones. More barricades went up. Tempers flared. The crowd linked arms, and within minutes, Londonderry was in the grip of the most savage and senseless rioting it has yet seen, with Bogside the battleground. The battle raged on. Rioters threw stones, iron bars, and then petrol bombs. And as the flames illuminated the scene of conflict, casualties mounted. It was reminiscent of the Blitz. As buildings blazed, the rioters sheltered behind their barricades to make more petrol bombs. Police used tear gas, and 300 British troops stood by on the outskirts of the city. Ulster's agonizing experience may hold grave consequences for the future.
Yes, so after this, British troops would be stationed in Ireland, Northern Ireland, and would get into a sort of increasing tension with local Catholics, culminating most famously in a massacre known as Bloody Sunday.
In the Northern Ireland city of Londonderry, a Catholic civil rights march is underway. Tension in the area between Catholics, Protestants and the British Army, specifically members of the Parachute Regiment, had been growing for weeks. Civil rights protest was turning into a riot as more and more Catholic youths began to shower the security forces with stones, petrol bombs, and other missiles. The troops opened fire, the crowd scattered. When the shooting stopped, the casualties were counted. 13 Catholics dead, another 17 wounded. As the shock of it all began to take hold, it wasn't long before that sad day became known as Bloody Sunday, another date in the Irish calendar of tragedy, another setback on the road to any prospect of peace.
Of course, the Irish Catholics would respond with their own campaign of violence, most famously blowing up somebody, Mountbatten, a member of the royal family.
Somebody Mountbatten.
Yeah, I can't remember his title.
Lord.
I think he's an earl or a lord.
It was Lord Mountbatten, wasn't he? The Queen's cousin or something.
They're all related.
And the last Viceroy of India, I believe.
Like Viceboy?
Yeah, well, here he is anyway.
For more than 30 years, Earl Mountbatten of Burma had spent every August in the quiet Irish fishing village of Mullaghmore in County Sligo. On the 27th of that same month in 1979, he was assassinated by the IRA, blown up in his fishing boat with his 14-year-old grandson and a local boatman. The death of the 79-year-old war hero and statesman, the Queen's cousin, shocked the nation and struck at the very heart of the British establishment. The IRA later said they'd executed Lord Louis, as they put it, blowing up the boat by remote control. At the funeral in London a few days later, thousands of mourners lined the streets to pay tribute to one of the great figures of the post-war years.
Yes, quite a public mistake there from me. It's Earl Mountbatten, not Lord Mountbatten.
Yeah.
Could be both.
Check yourself.
Well, like, they give titles out like candy.
If you're an Earl, I think you're automatically Lord.
Anyway.
There's a bit more talking to come.
So. We are talking over someone's funeral.
The Queen Mother, and Prince Andrew, dressed in the uniform of a midshipman, led the mourners at the service in Westminster Abbey. Kings, queens, and princes from all over Europe and the Commonwealth joined the congregation in singing the Sailor's Hymn. Earl Mountbatten's last parade was conducted with all the precision he would have expected of such a great occasion. As his coffin was carried off for burial at his country home at Romsey, the loss to the royal family of this most trusted advisor was incalculable.
That was part one of This Day in History. Part two will be right back after a quick break.
Sick shit, y'all!
Thanks!
Fresh threads, bro, Sif.
Ta.
Hot, get up, my dude!
Yeah?
Digging your cool, quirky style.
Jeez, just buy your own BFM t-shirt. Come on!
Want to get so many compliments it hurts? 95BFM is back in the merch game, baby. And right in time for Christmas. You've got four more days to grab a classic BFM shirt, a classic BFM bag, or a super slick one-off, never-to-be-repeated BFM tee designed by local ace artist Chippy. Don't miss out. Go to 95BFM.com/merch. Discount with your Simplicity B card, thanks to smashing promotions and good old mate Chippy.
Out your wallet and tenderly whisper goodbye to the rest of your cash.
I love you.
Because you're going to want to spend all of it at the Stolen Girlfriends Club sample sale. Unreleased samples, end of season stock, jewellery and accessories, nothing over $150. Treat yourself for cheap. Get kitted out in the good shit. Stolen Girlfriends Club sample sale. November 17th and 18th at Flying Fish Studios, 230 Ponsonby Road.
Hey, have you got much more stuff?
Oh, Kate's just getting the last of it from the ute. Thanks so much for sussing this gig, Hungry.
Hey, no worries, bud. We're big fans.
Ah, cool. Where's the dressing room?
People just get changed in the shitter down the hall.
No, just for my stuff.
Oh, I can hear. I'll just put them in the corner. Don't worry, bud.
Cool. It's a lot more exciting than the Browns Bay RSC, huh? How many people did you say we were playing for?
Probably just our newsreader, Connor. Set the drums up over there on that ottoman.
Cool. How are we getting paid?
It's more of an exposure thing. Connor tells two friends, one of them might tell someone else. Hey, watch the lava lamp.
Every Friday, live music direct from the 95BFM Lounge. Friday Live, only on 95BFM Drive. Brought to you by Rudy's, Brewers of Beer. Go to rudys.beer.
We now return to This Day in History. When we left off, violence was increasing in the Troubles, and it was increasingly coming home to affect the English. Famously, they killed Mountbatten, and then they tried to blow up the then Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher.
At 2:54 a.m. on Friday, October the 12th, 1984, the Irish Republican Army tried to assassinate the entire British cabinet. They almost succeeded. A bomb had been placed inside the Grand Hotel in Brighton, where most leading members of the Conservative Party were staying during their annual conference. Four people died, many more were badly injured. It was the most devastating terrorist attack ever launched against British politicians.
Among the injured, the industry secretary Norman Tebbit. He was rescued by firemen working under BBC television lights. They asked him in hospital later if he had any allergies to anything, and he said, yes, bombs. Mrs. Thatcher had been working in her suite when it happened. Apart from the wrecked bathroom, all the glass and mirrors in the bedroom were smashed. Police said the Prime Minister remained icy cool throughout. The conference began on time. The delegates, reduced in number, stood in silence for 2 minutes to honour the dead. A few hours later, Mrs. Thatcher was back in the hall for her big speech. Security men were everywhere. And Mrs. Thatcher declared her defiance of the bombers.
This government will not weaken. This nation will meet that challenge. Democracy will prevail.
Because more bombs were feared, Mrs. Thatcher and her husband were then escorted out of Brighton. They'd had a remarkable escape. A bathroom, which the Prime Minister had been in just 2 minutes before the blast, was completely wrecked as the 20-pound bomb sliced four floors out of the centre of the building. In other parts of the hotel, bedrooms used by government ministers and Conservative Party officials were showered with masonry. Hours later, the IRA issued a grim warning. Today, we were unlucky. But remember, you only have to be lucky once.
They would not be lucky, at least when it came to Thatcher. She would live to sign the Anglo-Irish Agreement 1 year later on this day in history, 1985.
The small town of Hillsborough, fiercely unionist, prepares itself to play host to an agreement which most of its inhabitants expect will be a betrayal. And they hang out the flags which have symbolised their separation from the rest of Ireland since it was partitioned in 1921. The Royal Ulster Constabulary, which took over the town centre in the early morning cold, was preparing the way for a deal which would give the Dublin government its first say after 64 years in the way the province is policed and justice is administered. And as Mrs. Thatcher's helicopter brought her into Hillsborough Castle, she knew that the way the agreement was presented would be crucial. The problem between Irish and British governments has always been that the only document the two sides could sign would be a document that was deeply ambiguous about what each side really wanted. This time, they've realised the dangers of ambiguity, and their task here was to create something that wouldn't break down directly they got home and each started putting their own versions on what had been agreed. That, at least, they avoided by taking part in a joint signing ceremony and giving a joint press conference. The agreement they came to sign is a lot less ambitious than the 1973 Sunningdale Agreement, which collapsed because of bitter loyalist opposition. But it's based on the recognition of the two traditions in Northern Ireland, the unionist, Protestant, orange one, and the nationalist, Catholic, green one. What they were trying to do was to make the present system, including the police, the courts, and the UDR, acceptable to the Catholic minority, and to make a genuinely devolved government possible in Northern Ireland.
I went into this agreement because I was not prepared to tolerate a situation of continuing violence. I want to offer hope to young people particularly that the cycle of violence and conflict can be broken.
Our purpose is to secure equal recognition and respect for the two identities in Northern Ireland. Nationalists can now raise their heads, knowing that their position is and is seen to be on an equal footing with that of members of the unionist community.
This time, unlike last year's summit, Dr. Fitzgerald, the Irish Taoiseach or Prime Minister, seemed confident and at ease with what had been agreed. And Mrs. Thatcher, though she made no bones about whose side she was on, was careful not to be dismissive about Irish aspirations when she set out her view of the agreement.
Its purpose is to try to bring together and to support all of those people in Northern Ireland who wish to end violence and to proceed in a democratic way. That is its purpose. We really entered this agreement in good faith and earnestly to bring that about. The Taoiseach, as a nationalist and a Republican, myself, as a unionist and a loyalist.
Whether unionists and loyalists would recognise her as one of their own after this seems unlikely. But the agreement is now in being, and Dr. Fitzgerald will try hard to present it as an historic step forward, while Mrs. Thatcher will do her best to persuade the unionist majority here that it's all been done in their interests.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.